hey, thanks so much for joining me today on the Cocktie Podcast. I'm your host, Gary. In case you're new to the show, I'm the editor and owner of Appy the Cat here at fortnerd.com. She's my princess, and Allie knows it. You may have seen me as DM for Quest for the Cure or Icehold's Rime of the Frostmaiden, as Cicero on Cyberpunk Independence, as Doc on Scribes and Scrolls, or sailing on the SS Failboat over on Talon and Claw. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to the show or follow us on social media at fortnerd.com. That's at fortnerd, D-O-T-C-O-M. Or both. Both works for me, but whatever works for you is fine. First, the news. Okay, so last week we talked about the hate raids and Twitch, who was either unwilling or unable to respond. Today they launched a lawsuit against the two individuals they believe are behind the raid attacks, or at least leading them. According to the lawsuit, Twitch blames users Cruise Control and Creatine Overdose, based in the Netherlands and Vienna, respectively. Or so they believe. It's because the trick is that Twitch doesn't know who these users are. They also filed the lawsuit in a US court, which doesn't have jurisdiction over European citizens. Allegedly, Twitch has created algorithms and increased security on account creation, which these users have managed to bypass. In fact, Twitch gaming itself was hate raided recently in an apparent show of defiance towards how little Twitch could do to stop them. Will the lawsuit stop them? Probably not. It may embolden them even more. But the community has come together, doing more for each other than Twitch was allegedly doing for us, and that's really something. A shout out to Hackbolt, who is creating a list of bot accounts and sharing them freely amongst content creators who stopped because people were complaining that they were accidentally being included. I use complaining in the politest possible way. Hit Hackbolt's coffee if you can. They deserve it. I'll include the link in the show notes. It's ko-fi/Hackbolt. They did a lot of work and took a lot of shit, which they didn't deserve. So I just wanted to say thanks, Hackbolt, and I'll drop their ko-fi in the show notes. I don't know if you've heard this, but D&D has embarked on an unlikely quest with an unexpected adventuring companion. Nerds. No, not you or me. The candy. They've introduced new limited edition Nerds Gummy Cluspers and Rainbow Nerds packaging. If you upload your receipt to nerdscandy.com/DND, you'll even get to join an exclusive D&D campaign called Restoring Harmony. You'll get access to a single adventure and character sheet that a DM can run in about an hour. Yes, you play as a nerds character that starts at level 1. No, this isn't a dream. And yes, it is amazing. You can even enter a sweepstakes to win a bunch of cool loot, including D&D books and more. Now, the sweepstakes isn't open to everyone everywhere, though, so please check where you live before entering. Don't at me, I don't make the rules. You should be able to find these new limited edition Nerds Gummy Clusters and Rainbow Nerds theater box packaging at mass grocery, drug, and convenience stores wherever you live. I say should because they've been sold out everywhere I've looked, and in fact Twitter is awash with photos that look like someone's preparing for a candy hurricane, and empty Nerds displays everywhere. Now, they're only around until the end of the year, so get hunting, nerds! No, that was your call to action, friends. That was nerds as in you and I, not the candy. Now, as many of you know, and in fact, this episode's going to talk a little bit about, my love for organized play and the Adventurers League in particular. D&D brings people together like few activities on Earth, but not everyone has a ready-made group of friends available to try out the world's greatest role-playing game. That's why organized play is so powerful. It builds a community of gamers and opens the door to a game that some folks otherwise may not have access to. I've met an incredible amount of friends in the Adventurers League, and they live all around the world. If you're not familiar with it, Adventurers League is basically a shared world for Dungeons & Dragons. Everyone's playing with the same set of rules, and your characters are portable. So let's say you go on vacation to Japan, and you find an Adventurers League game there. You can bring your Adventurers League character that you only ever play with your friends in Hoboken, New Jersey, and that would be totally legit, because the rules are shared. Now, this is a long preamble to say Dungeons & Dragons Adventurers League has introduced a new set of rules on how to make characters, which streamlines the process and makes the game a lot more accessible. It's a powerful move that reduces friction overall. It's a lot less record keeping, and it's going to mean a lot less headaches. Really, the only negative is that this is the fourth sweeping rule change in 4 years. It's a welcome change, don't get me wrong, but they fundamentally shifted how Adventurers League works a lot over the past little while, so it's okay to be a bit skeptical. I'm not, though, because I think it's great. Let's talk about what they did. They've only released the character generation rules so far, but they look pretty good. It's important to note that the currently released rules only apply to the main Forgotten Realms campaign, as there are two other alternate campaigns, the Oracle of War set in Eberron, and the Mist Hunters set in Ravenloft, each of which has their own unique character development guidelines. First big news, you can start at level 5. Originally, you could only start at level 1, and as you play more, you build up your character and advance in level. Now, as someone who's run events of upwards of 25 tables, fitting everyone in is very difficult. Quote, oh, I don't have a character that can play, or my only tier-appropriate character has played this adventure already, unquote. Boom. Level 5, new character, play and go. There's a small list of magic items you can choose from, which is great. And last year, they opened up character creation, too. It used to be that you could only select one resource from the player's handbook for your character. So, for example, if you're a Gloomstalker Ranger, you could only use resources from Xanathar's and the PHB. No more. Play whatever nonsense from as many rulebooks as you want. Fewer rules, more play. That's what they said, and it's true. They smoothed out leveling, too. If you play an adventure, you gain a level. If you want, and only if you want. For example, my character Skip is happy at level 16, and I intend to keep him there for a while. There used to be a gold cap on when you were playing adventures, so for example, you could only gain a limited amount of gold per adventure. But it ended up being a lot of math. So, if you played this many hours at this tier, you earned this amount of gold, and each tier was different. My guess is what they were really trying to cut down on was the amount of consumables people could buy, as the hardcover books give out a ton of gold, which is very different from their pre-published modules. So people could go into an event and buy 500 healing potions, for example, without a thought. The gold cap feels to me like a back-ended way to address this issue. But now they've limited the amount of consumables you can have, which addresses the problem too in a less confining way. They've also added common magic items as a separate list than regular magic items. Each character can hold up to 5 common magic items, which is great, because my capability has no effect on the game, but by God, my character Winter, the hero of legend, has earned its majesty. But now I don't have to choose. They made trading easier. It used to be that you'd have to use train downtime days to trade, but not anymore. Now you can just trade items with other players in the Forgotten Realms campaign. The fixes are really modest, but they're common sense, and they work. If this were a video game, I'd describe the suite of rules changes as a sick quality of life update that knocks it out of the park. Adventures League is more accessible to the players. It's easier for the organizers. Hell, it's just better. I really look forward to seeing what the future brings. In fact, my only personal complaint is that they keep insisting on using the initials for the player's handbook, BPH, instead of PHB. Otherwise, I'm really happy with the changes. Today I'm talking with Jared from Monsters and Multiclass, which is a podcast YouTube show which is assessing all of the different combinations in D&D classes can offer, and monsters. He and his co-hosts Kevin and Will drop new videos on Wednesdays and new podcasts on Thursdays. It's the same show, it's just the format that's different in the algorithms and magic and timey-wimey nonsense. I hope you enjoy my chat with Jared from Monsters and Multiclass, which contains far more tangents than usual, but I loved it all the same. Jared, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me on. It's good after all of our issues getting this scheduled.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a battle. We've rolled for initiative a bunch of times and neither of us has chosen to act. It's been a little uncomfortable.
Keep holding my action for a better time.
Which doesn't even exist anymore. It's like we're playing third edition rules. We forgot how to play D&D. So I always like to start the people I speak with the same question, because I'm curious about your gaming origin story. We're all coming at this hobby from a different place, potentially for different reasons. So what was your first experience with Dungeons and Dragons?
Yeah, my first experience was getting like right out of high school, later times of high school. And my school district, it was like the last 4 years of my high school career, had a strike. And all of the teachers were gone for, again, like 4 months or so. And it was the wildest time to be a high school student because nothing mattered. We were all just kind of hanging out all the time, didn't show up to class. What was the point? They basically told us grades didn't matter. And they're like, whatever you had, we'll probably go with. So in that time, I had a bunch of free time. And a friend of mine had an opening at their D&D table because the DM's brother had to get kicked out for being a murder hobo, which He understood. He's like, okay, that's not the game we're playing. Got it. And yeah, my best friend asked me like, hey, what is your interest in D&D? I was like, I know nothing about it. I mean, this was like pre Stranger Things and like total takeoff of fifth edition. I think it was like right at the start of it. I did start on fifth edition.
Okay.
And yeah, sat down with the DM, basically asked me if I wanted to go through character creation myself or just have him make something for me. I said, make something for me. He asked if I wanted to play Goku from Dragon Ball Z. And I'm like, that sounds cool. I can't really turn that down. And somehow I ended up with what is not even arguably what is like factually the worst class in D&D 5th edition, the Four Elements Monk. So it holds a sweet spot in my heart because I did not think it was bad. It was very fun to play. I also didn't know what was going on, so I'm sure that helped a little bit. But from there, really just fell in love with the hobby, kept coming back week over week. We played through a couple of modules. That's the word I'm looking for. Horde of the Dragon Queen, Rise of Tiamat, the Elemental Evil campaign, Princes of the Apocalypse. I don't remember exactly which one that is. When after about, I think, 2 years, our DM kind of just disappeared from our friend group in the middle of a game of Curse of Strahd. So leaving that vacuum, I figured I really like this hobby. I want it to continue. Nobody else was really jumping at it. So I figured, let's try out this DMing thing. And very quickly fell in love with it, fell in love with the process, the so many things to improve on and just like figure out from the DM's chair that you just weren't really doing as a player. And I've basically been a forever DM since.
You know, it sounds like a plot hook, your DM disappearing in the middle of the campaign. I'm surprised you all didn't follow up on that, because that's like the first thing that I would have done. It's like, the DM is gone. Do we have any clues? Did the barmaid see him?
It was actually pretty clear. I was just trying to keep it out of it. But
Totally fine. Yeah.
He ended up dating my ex-girlfriend like 3 weeks after we broke up.
Then all of that makes sense. I apologize for my joke getting into some awkwardness. Okay.
No. Don't, please. That's not awkward. It's been 5 years and I'm getting married next month.
Oh, well, congratulations on achieving your next level in the quest. Do you have any memories of your very first game? Like, what was it about D&D that made you come back that second game?
Yeah. I think it was, and I'm assuming this was the first game, my memory's fuzzy, but we had a player at our table who was a bit of a problem player, and I don't even remember when they left, doesn't matter, every group goes through some growing pains, mm-hmm. And in, I believe it was the first session, there was a dragonborn who was basically making the claim, like, if somebody comes down here and fights me, I promise no one will die. I just want to find a strong opponent. And I think I actually stepped up and was like, yeah, let's do this. This sounds awesome, right? Like, I just want to be a part of this moment. And while we're fighting, he's, you know, saying like nobody else can interfere. And the problem player ends up taking pot shots at him in the middle of our fight. Starts complaining about how he should be hidden because he's a rogue. Of course, he was a rogue. And our DM just had him get absolutely destroyed by a lightning bolt from this dragonborn. And it was just one of those moments where I just saw how like quickly the game could change and go from these like kind of what felt like very scripted things to even a problem player in this case, causing a very large shift, just totally changed that encounter. And it changed the course of the next, well, I really don't know how long, but it changed a lot, because instead of things kind of resolving peacefully and us getting to move on, one of our companions was almost dead. And now we had a pretty formidable enemy. And it was just one of those moments where I'm like, yeah, this can't be achieved in video games. I mean, there's no way that you can account for all of these variables. But when you have a table of people who are just going with it, it's incredible what can really happen.
Yeah, my line is always, I mean, I do it as a joke because my friends understand my style, but I'm like, you see the outline of a giant thumb coming out of the sky. It's coming towards you. Do you still want to be a dick?
Right.
You run, or you co-run, or you co-host, I should say, Monsters in Multiclass, which, as a person who runs a show like that, takes a lot of time, but many hands make light work. How did you meet your co-hosts, and why did you decide you wanted to make a show together?
So we actually met 7 years back. It was the end of senior year, and we were... Oh, it's the same story. They were actually the first group that I sat and played D&D with.
Okay.
So that's how we met. And I will not say we became like fast friends. We showed up once a week together and played together. But I think that tabletops are the ultimate friend maker. And I'll always say to people, if you're not sure how to make friends as an adult, start playing Dungeons and Dragons, because people will show up every week and you will form bonds with them. So inevitably, we started hanging out, ended up going to Kevin's wedding, have become extremely close friends with them. And, you know, the rest is history from that standpoint. But as for starting the show, honestly, I'll say it's a pretty simple story. We were always distracted at work talking about Dungeons and Dragons, even if we didn't work together, just like online chats, whatever. Something would happen in the game the previous night, and I'd say, hey, I didn't understand this ruling. Let's talk about it. Does it make sense? Yes, no. What are we going to do about it? Which always led to the exact same result, which was me getting extremely salty about some rule just because I didn't think it made sense. And Kevin coming in and just smacking me with a bunch of D&D knowledge and putting me in my place from that regard, which, you know, it's the way it goes. I didn't know the rules very well or why anything happened. So after enough time of this, I think Kevin actually came up with the idea and said, you know, why don't we start a podcast? Let's, you know, we're talking about this all the time. It sounds like a thing that we'd be good at. We kind of did some Googling, and at the time, now 3 years ago, there really wasn't too much talk D&D shows, or too many talk D&D shows. I think since then, it's definitely gotten a little bit larger between interviews and other styles of shows, just talking about the game. And that's fantastic. But we saw an untapped market and workshopped it a little bit, figured out what type of segments we wanted to do. We did a practice episode, which we actually recently released for our 100th episode special. And it's horrible, but we did it and found we just had fun with it and just kept growing from there.
Why Monsters in Multiclass? Why does the combination work for your show so well?
You know, I think it's the fact that it is such a healthy dose of both sides of the table. It's not purely player driven by any means. The multi-class aspect is very player focused because that's generally the people who are putting it together, unless you're like me as a DM and like using PC levels for monsters, because that's fun to do. And the monster side is just so DM focused that I think it allowed us to get just a healthy following from both sides of the table. And the combination itself, I mean, really, it's just as long as we can talk about Dungeons and Dragons, that's all that matters. But I think with multi-classes, we were drawn to it because there seemed like an endless amount of multi-classes, right? Now here we are, we've got like six left to talk about, and maybe we'll go back and talk about some old ones since there's been so many releases since that time. But I think it just established a good framework with a lot to discuss. Same with monsters, a lot to discuss. And overall, you know, we were interested in it. So that worked out there. Though the fun fact I always like to throw down is that before Monsters and Multiclass, none of us had multiclassed ever.
Really?
Yep. Yep. We were fakers.
That's interesting because, you know, I listened to the 100th episode recently in preparation for this interview, and I don't think I have my character binder. I play organized play a lot, and I don't think I have a straight character, a non-multi-class character. Like I have three or four level 20 characters. Not one of them is straight.
That's classed. fantastic. And I don't think at this point I would either, because I do see how much opportunity there is from a role-playing perspective even. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the mechanics. I really do. And I would be a liar if I said it wasn't about that at all. The number crunching is fun. It's cool to see awesome combinations work. But the fact that multi-classing just blows the book wide open with opportunity for character development is what really draws me to it, and is something that before the show, I was just totally blind to.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot now a little bit, because you said you have six multi-class combinations left to explore. What do you do with the show? Like, are you, you said you're going to go back and just revisit combinations you've already explored? Are you going to do something else? What's the plan?
Yeah, so we've already started branching out a little bit, and that mainly came from going through Tasha's subclasses I don't even remember which book it was the first time we did it. Really, the Artificer is what did it. When the Artificer came out, we figured we should cover the Artificer before we start dissecting it as a multi-class, mainly because our best thoughts come from when we're all talking about these abilities and whatnot and figuring it out as we go. So we ended up covering that. That episode did pretty well for us. And I think we realized, like, oh, this is topical information that is relevant to people. So we're going to jump on these. You know, anytime subclasses come out, we want to cover those. So each time there, hey, that's an episode. Other areas we go down, monsters, of course, we're not going to run out of anytime soon. And if we do, man, that's impressive. But we've been taking fan questions. We did that a couple of times back in the day. But with the 100th episode, we had like a big one where we just took fan questions. And we've also talked a lot about just covering magic items, which is definitely a branch off. And admittedly, there's probably not as much fan interest, but don't really care about that. It's just fun to talk about. And it was something that Will, who's normally has a healthy amount of disinterest in the podcast, he shows up to record. He might do a little bit of prep. That's his thing. He's smart. He still kills it. So it's fine. He actually expressed a lot of interest in covering magic items. So to me, it just seemed like kind of a like, hey, you know, if we're out of stuff, we're out of stuff. As subclasses come, we'll take care of it. Otherwise, I think we've got a ton of fan questions in the backlog. There's tons of magic items if we have fun doing that. And as mentioned as well, definitely want to go back through some of the older multi-classes just because so much has changed, not just with the game itself, but also our viewpoints. I listened to some of these earlier episodes and I say the dumbest stuff. I've learned a lot. It turns out that talking about multi-classing once a week for 3 years will really stretch your brain to absorb some new information and see some new ideas.
I believe that. Now, you last week or the week before, you released your 100th episode, which is a huge number when you consider that most shows fizzle out around episode 20. Either they don't take off or there's just the people lose interest. At what point did you know that you had something with monsters and multi-class? When did you know that it was working as a show and really resonating with people?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I mentioned the Artificer episode. That did really well, and we had a lot of good, positive feedback from that. The other time was when we first started, we had said to each other, like, wouldn't it be funny if we got Treant Monk on the show? Like, there's no way we'd ever do that, right? We won't get to that size. Treant Monk, if listeners aren't familiar, is like a optimizer professional almost. He breaks down D&D in, very much in optimizing terms. And he wrote the God Wizard Guide forever ago, which we always turn to when creating a wizard and choosing spells. So we ended up actually getting him to come on the show, and it was a great time. We recorded a great episode. And afterwards, found out that he didn't record his audio. So we had three of the four of us with audio and had to scrap the entire episode and do another one, I think like a week or two later or whatever. But that, I'll say, that time of starting to get guests on the show and starting to feel like, you know, we had that ability to reach out to others and say, like, hey, you know, we're getting more than 5 views. Do you want to come hang out with us? And they're like, yeah, sure. That sounds great. Cross promotion, whatever. That's awesome. The other side of it is definitely when we started to get people picking up on our inside jokes. You know, when you're recording a podcast, you're talking with some of your friends, you're messing around with each other. And then, you know, people start coming out at us and they're like, hey, you know, like, watch out, the NAGPA's watching you, or, oh, you know, I want to make a Whips Nettington character as well. And just like all these little things that felt like in jokes started to become out jokes. They started to become, you know, for other people and such. And not in a bad way. See how that could be negative, but we're not at that point yet. Still a really good time anytime somebody brings up some of those old gems.
Awesome. Now, when you've done 100 episodes, more than 100 episodes, I keep saying 100 episodes because it's easier to say, but you've done more than 100 episodes now. Has anything surprised you about the conversations that you've had, like about the various multi-class combinations, anything when guests you've had, anything that you didn't expect that came up in conversation that, you know, maybe changed your mind about something or just surprised you generally?
Yeah, I mean, kind of broad answer, but I feel like the biggest surprise is that I'm still surprised. I mean, we've got a couple of multi-classes left. We just released our Artificer Bard multi-class, I think, well, today. And it was one of those ones where I came in with a very clear idea of what I thought would work. And the more we talk about it, the more opinions change. And you just kind of realize that, you know, something you were really adamant about at the start was entirely off base. And that's why I found it so fun to have these discussions together, you know, with a group, because when I just look up general opinions on the internet, it seems like people get very rooted around popular opinions. And I often find that the popular opinions aren't always as right or realistic as I think people might believe they are. Things like, you know, overpowered classes that sure might be overpowered and whatever, but they're not fun or they're not interesting from a role-playing perspective or whatever else. So that'll be my follow-up one, is the fact that popular opinion is very quick to dismiss a lot of things or to praise certain aspects of the game. But I think when you really dive into it and come in from the perspective of what will this feel like to play at your table, you'll come up with something wildly different or have a very different opinion.
Does popular opinion, do the things that you've read online, does that ever inform what you plan to talk about?
It definitely can. I try to not look up too much beforehand, but if it's a multi-class or monster or whatever that I don't really, like, I read through it and I just feel very on the fence with it, I'll look it up. I'll try to see what the general consensus is, see if people have thought of absolutely broken stuff to do with it, just to kind of bring that stuff up, which mainly came from us not bringing up those broken combinations and people in comments and tweets or whatever being like, hey, you totally missed this one thing. And it's like, well, we just didn't talk about it. I don't know what you want me to say.
There's only so much time.
Right.
Like, you can't go over every possible combination. It's like, well, if you break the bard barbarian down at 16-4, you could do this. But if you do 17-3, you could do this and break every possible level combination. Like, your show would be a day.
Yeah. And honestly, for the most part, not very interesting. We'd bring up, you know, as you said, like, oh, yeah, this is what would happen at 16-4. Well, how would this feel to play? About the same as a 15-5, to be honest. So it's,
yeah,
we focused on the highlights.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a seven, I live in the 17-3 zone. So that's my happy place.
It's a good place to be.
My barbarian seven, level 17 and 3 levels of fighter. It's just, you know, critting all day and it makes me happy, you know?
That should make you happy. And a 3 level dip into fighter, especially with another martial class, is always going to be a great idea.
Yeah, it's 8d12 on a crit. I just plus 2d6, of course. Again, don't forget the 2d6.
Where's the 2d6 come from?
Divine Fury, because of course I'm a zealot. And I'm not a, what am I, a peasant?
No, you didn't think to go 17 levels into Berserker Barbarian?
Oh no, because you know,
respect your time.
Yeah, well, there. I mean, there's that, but like, you know, the assumption is with the two attacks and advantage, the crit will come up enough with Great Weapon Master that bonus action I get that anyways. Plus, I get the extra damage. Plus, I basically can't die. So, I mean, it works out. Like, it's, you know, 300 hit points.
I'm going to turn this around on you really quick.
All right,
what's it like to be playing so many level 20 characters? You're a rare breed.
So it's great because, and this is my plug for Adventures League. I've got a lot of friends who work in Adventures League and do organized play. Level 20 play is great if you have the right team.
Okay.
Because, so I'll give you an example of that. You know, we played with a DM, we went with a bunch of casters. And, you know, I was playing my wizard at the time, 18 wizard, 2 fighter, of course.
Bladesinger?
No.
Just for the actions.
Diviner, 100%. Yeah, I'm gonna cast Meteor Swarm twice, and it's gonna call it a day. but no, and as long as everybody's sort of on the same page, because the DM's like, look, we can play this however you want. If, you know, I see 2 wizards here, you can each cast Simulacrum, which is going to take longer, but then I'm going to make the fights harder. So you cannot cast Simulacrum and the fights won't be as hard, but it will take less time.
Right. The invisible hand isn't really that invisible in the DM world.
Exactly. And so the thing about level 20 play is it's super swingy. And, you know, Alan Patrick is a very talented writer of high level modules who's sort of found a balance of the ability to create compelling stories and challenges without making them either too difficult or too easy. Because either when you're level 20, commonly you're either going to steamroll everything and they're not going to get an action, which is what happens more often than not, because they want to skew on that side as opposed to killing everybody all the time, or you're going to kill everybody all the time before they even had an opportunity to act. So in some ways, without the right team, it's not actually that fun.
Sure. You need everybody to be kind of on the same page of like,
yeah,
look, we're not going to try and like, we're already level 20. We've hit this power cap, you know, let's not try and break the game further just to make our DM's life hell, which I think is a perfectly valid thing to go off of. Yeah. I think the highest I've ever DM'd is actually level 17. Mm-hmm. I don't actually think I've DM'd higher than that. I've played at least one level 20 game, lasted a couple of sessions. I think it was a drunken master monk. Ooh. And then 3 levels into the path, the totem barbarian.
Ooh. I think
that's what it's called.
Okay.
And it was just and it was a turtle. Of course.
Of course, so it was. Was his name Michelangelo?
I don't remember what it was. Dang it.
it was either Michelangelo, Raphael, or Donatello, because otherwise you'd just lost opportunity.
Yeah, we're going to say it was Donatello and not have you press on that or make me check D&D Beyond for the actual sad name. So that was like a blast, though, because that character, its whole thing was that Way of the Drunken Master, might be saying that subclass wrong, whatever. When they use their flurry of blows, they can like move 10 feet and attack another creature up to like 5 times or something like that. So I became like a human AoE where I would rage, of course, and it was a strength monk too at that high of a level, which is why I had to be a turtle so that way I could have my AC at 17.
Right.
And yeah, it was such a blast to just like go around the battlefield and just do these like consistent hits over and over and over again. And at that level, I mean, you've got 17 key points per short rest.
Yeah.
So 1 point to flurry of blows was a no-brainer every time.
Yeah.
So it was so fun to just have that type of play style. And even then, I will say that was by no means a broken character, because as I said, my AC was 17, maybe 19, because I got the bracers that get like a +2 defense or some, or AC. It did some solid damage, but it wasn't a level 20 wizard by any means.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. Like level 20, you need to be a very particular dungeon master. I would not recommend to just everybody trying their hand at it, because it is a slog. And, you know, if you have players who know what they're doing, it's great. But that's my experience with level 20. Mm-hmm. It can be fun if you have the right group. Otherwise, it could just be a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. You also, I feel like you got to find people. You don't have to find people like this. But if you want to run a level 20 campaign, you're probably best off finding people who enjoy combat a lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, and this isn't an insult or anything to anybody. Role play only games or mostly games are 100% valid. They're great. Played in them, had a bunch of fun. But if you're going to be level 20, don't waste my time with things that aren't world-ending threats. I need to be beating the crap out of some giant monster, because otherwise I feel like the power level just isn't necessary. And it just complicates things and kind of muddies things up from the DM side. I can run a political intrigue game with just the same amount of role playing at level 10 as mm-hmm. I can level 20. And it's going to be a lot more reined in at level 10. And I honestly think players are going to have a lot more fun having to actually think of how to get around challenges instead of the answer being, we can kill anybody we want because we're basically gods.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, you could do, there's so much you can do at every level. And like you say, level 20 is not necessarily amenable for every campaign or play style. So that is my pitch for Adventures League. And the only time I've played level 20 is because of Adventures League. And so I would definitely highly recommend it if people are interested in high level play. So now you have brought an element to my show that you have in your show of the tangent. I appreciate that. I respect it. I love it. But now I want to ask you a question. What is the worst multi-class combination in all of Dungeons and Dragons?
Wow, that's actually tough to just throw at me out of nowhere.
Well, I mean, I was sort of leading up to it, but then
I think I'd probably say the Sorcerer Wizard mm-hmm. because it just has nothing going for it. Maybe a small dip into Sorcerer, you can get some meta magic for your wizard stuff. But realistically, it's just, there's no real gain you get out of it. You're slowing down your wizard progression, or the other way around. It's like, if you go into Sorcerer, you get some ritual spell casting from the wizard at like a level one dip or something. My corny answer, and I'm going to think more on this. I might just like blurt out 20 minutes later, a different multi-class. My Perfect. Corny answer is going to be the multi-class you don't have fun playing.
Boo.
That is the worst multi-class.
Boo. And a chirp boo.
Yeah, that's fair.
Never had to boo anybody on my show before, but that did.
I'm glad I could be the first. That feels I feel like I've earned something there.
Yeah, it's I mean, we don't make t-shirts because our ad budget is zero, but you know. Okay, so that seems reasonable, the Sorcerer Wizard. Now the counterpoint is, what is the best multi-class combination? If you say the one you love playing, I'm going to end this interview right now.
Okay. It's the one that brings you the most enjoyment.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining me today on the Cocked Eye Podcast.
No. I have an actual answer.
Okay.
So you can go online and you can find people telling you what the strongest multi-class is, but I don't think that's the best way to quantify it. I do believe that the importance of, you know, role play as a whole is to have role playing tied into your character and your multi-class. So my favorite for a while now has been Monk plus Spore Druid.
Okay.
Because I absolutely love the concept of a monk off in the woods surrounded by fungus who just draws their power from the natural energy of fungi. That sounds amazing to me. And mechanically, it has this really cool overlap at like level 8 or something. It doesn't come on early. It's not one of those like right out the gate multi-classes where the Spore Druid can spore up. They can use their wild shape to get temp HP. And every melee attack they make gets an additional D6 at the lower levels. And I think that goes up to D8, D10, maybe not that high. But either way, get additional melee damage. So that would stack with the monk's flurry of blows. So I love that idea of them just, you know, being a a spore fighter.
Kind of gross though, right?
Yeah, that's what also does it for me.
I mean, like, it's insult to injury. You're going to punch somebody in the face, but then you're going to punch them with like fungus and it's just going to like...
Yeah, it's going to be gross. They're going to have to definitely get it checked out afterwards.
Ew.
in terms of strength, I think the like Warlock plus anything generally works pretty well, but Warlock Paladin is just so good. Warlock Paladin, Sorcerer Paladin, like the charisma casters combine to just make better classes. It's absurd.
Yeah, my level 20 Paladin, my quote unquote Paladin, is 12 levels of Sorcerer, 8 levels of Paladin.
Yeah, the Plurderer.
Yeah, he's pretty good, you know, standing AC of 32. Like it.
What? How?
That's a great question. So,
next question.
No, okay. So plus 3 shield, you get 5, so that's 15. Plus, oh, it might be 30. Plus, so 15 from the shield, 11 from plus 3 full plate. So that's 26. He has the Paladin ability, which gives him plus 1 the subclass style. Fighting style, yep. He has a blessing of protection. So that's plus 1 to all saves and plus 1 to armor class. And he fights with a staff of power.
When you sit down at an Adventure League table and it's a stranger, do they look at your character sheet and just shrug? It's like, how am I supposed to deal with this?
I actually had a DM because he asked, he's like, what's your passive perception? Oh, I'll tell you about my level 30, whatever. He's like, you know, what's AC, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, okay, so how'd you get that bullshit?
Yeah.
And it's not that hard. And then, you know, it's 35 with shield, the Tarrascal hit me on an 18. So that's, you know, that's something. And then, you know, if you're invisible, then he rolls with disadvantage because he's got a cloak of invisibility as well.
There you go.
You know, it's fun. I like it. I mean, it's just, you know, we could talk about my power gaming all day because I'm a recovering power gamer. I'm a role player now. And I call power gaming role playing. So some of my friends that I play Adventures League with, my friend Spencer, who runs Citadel Geek, he knows what role playing is. He's like, yeah, Gary's a role player. So he knows when I say that, he knows what that means.
I mean, hey, at the end of the day, the best part about D&D is that there's so many ways to enjoy it. And there really is nothing wrong with being a power gamer. Just in the same way, there's nothing wrong with somebody who says, oh yeah, I love the role play, but keep the numbers away from me.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally I want to roll dice to determine outcomes, but beyond that, I don't want to fight.
Yeah.
And the other side, the other extreme is I want to make something extremely broken because I just find it fun to get there. And this is going to sound weird, but I do respect it a little bit more with Adventure League because I feel like you generally have to like earn that through play over a long period of time versus somebody who's just trying to ruin their specific tables game.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to ruin everybody's game. I don't just want to ruin my friend's game. It has to be like the general public. That's what I'm focused on.
But the people that you go to and you, cause I assume everybody knows it's a level 20 game when you sit down.
100%.
Right? The people who play Adventure League and get to level 20, I feel like you're all on the same page.
They know what's up.
Yeah.
They know it's
like, this isn't their first day playing D&D and they're like, oh, what's my attack modifier? Like they know it's 20. Yeah. They know how they got it too, but it's 20.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the thing going on tangent again, the thing that I like about breaking fifth edition is that it's not really meant to be broken. They've done a fairly good job of balancing it, generally making it attractive to play sort of all the way up, but it's not like 3.5. And you said that you were in, you've started in fifth edition, so you didn't have that experience of multiple books and sort of combining everything. But that was third edition,
right?
Like my primary character in fifth edition was level 16 and he had 7 classes. because everything, every, this is the, he's the perfect character for your show. He was a ranger, he was a monk, he was a whole bunch of different things. He was a crag-top archer, he was a whole bunch of different things. And I said that twice, oopsie. And so, but with fifth edition, it's harder because there aren't quite as many options and you're a bit more restricted in how things go. You don't get quite as many advantages for going between classes, et cetera, right, et cetera. So doing that and having somebody say, what the fuck did you just tell me? Like you're rolling how many dice on a crit? You know, you're casting Meteor Swarm twice. Like what? It brings me joy.
That moment where somebody goes, how did you do that? And you get to say, okay, like, let me go through every single thing I chose that allowed me to get to this moment right here.
Exactly.
I see that a lot with one of my co-hosts and players, Kevin, where he gets so excited when one of his like bullshit combination pay off. And, you know, I always act a little bit frustrated, but it's like, man, I gotta respect it. That's a solid build right there. It's playing a bard. I think it's College of Swords or Valor. I always mix them up. And a rogue multi-class arcane trickster. Arcane trickster was actually kind of a separate idea at first, but he's got booming blade. So combining that with it used to be smites because he used to be a paladin. But either way, just all the combination of things he can do, the booming blade, feline agility because he's a tabaxi and like just, you know, hit you, run away to the other side, and oh, I guess I still have my bonus action left, is just some of the most frustrating stuff I've had to DM for. And I respect it. I respect it so hard.
Yeah. My favorite character that I play, his name is Skip. He is a fighter, a ranger, and a rogue.
Okay.
He is a crossbow expert.
Okay.
And so he was sneaking up to this black dragon. It was a level 16 multi-table adventure. So this was an epic. So they're generally considered to be harder. Sneaks up to the dragon, tries to pick the dragon's pocket. He's a fucking fighter. He's not a rogue. So he fails and the dragon eye opens. It was actually run by my friend Spencer, who I mentioned earlier. And so because my initiative's like plus 15 or plus 18 or something, I went first, obviously. And I unloaded on this guy, did like, you know, 8 attacks. I did 200 and something points of damage in the first round, which is pretty good at level 16. And I'm like, did I kill him? He's like, no. I'm like, fuck. Okay. Well,
that's my only trick.
Yeah, that's it. I'm done. I am spent. Now I'm just going to sit here and accept what the dragon has for me. But after the adventure was over, Spence just like, I got something to tell you. I have a confession to make. I'm like, what's the confession? And he's like, you did kill the dragon.
Ooh.
What? He's like, you did kill the dragon. But as soon as you told me you were playing Skip in this adventure, I maxed all of the hit points for every monster. So out of the module, I killed it, but he had an extra 80 hit points because I brought this character into the adventure.
That's great. That's great.
Yes. Well, it's
good that the DM knew you to balance around it instead of.
Yeah, you can't. None of my listeners can see my face, but I'm making disgusted faces at Jared right now.
You're like, let me kill the fucking dragon.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, all he has is the ability to kill things in one round, and you know his passive perception. I'm trying to play to get it to 40 at level 20.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and then he goes fast. He's like plus 18 initiative. Other than that, I've got no goals. So.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it's just this multi-classing. This is what you can do. This is why you should listen to monsters and multi-class, because these are the kind of ideas that these fine gentlemen will give you. I will put the links, of course, to their show in the show notes.
I'll honestly say though, like that's a bit of a mislead, because I generally don't think we don't often go into that level of like, here's the way that you can just like make this ridiculous, you know, 100 initiative class. I mean, maybe we should more often.
No, you don't change what you're doing. I'm just trying to get people to listen to your show.
I'm trying to not get that. Don't listen to us. You're not going to like it.
Oh my God. If that's the case, why are you here?
I don't know. You kept asking me.
I mean, I did ask you repeatedly and now you're here and you're stuck with it. So let's get back off the tangent. I too am having fun. Let's get back onto the tangent. So you get the last episode for your 100th episode. You did a lot of question and answer with your fans. How have your fans reacted to your show? And how do you process any feedback that you might receive from them saying, hey, you know, I like this suggestion you had for this multi-class, or I thought this was really cool, and then actually using it in their games. Do you ever get that? And if so, how do you?
Oh, yeah. That's the greatest feeling. That's what honestly keeps me making this show. It's been a really rough year for me from like a personal perspective. My father was diagnosed with cancer in February and passed in July.
Yes.
And it was August. Yeah. Okay. Month ago. And I'm getting married next month. And a million other things in my life have been happening. And it is stressful. But every once in a while, you log into whatever app you're using and see a comment from somebody who says, hey, stumbled across your videos and I absolutely love it. And because of you, I've made an entire campaign centered on the NAGPA. And it's like, whoa, what? You're telling me that my words have made an entire campaign in your game. Obviously not solely from our words, but the fact that we can continuously provide inspiration to people in their characters, in their DMing, in whatever, is really cool. I mean, it's awesome, because usually I think it's pretty common that this type of thing happens in intersocial circles. You know, you talk to another friend who DMs, you give an idea, maybe they use it. That's awesome. That feels good. And being able to see that on kind of like a larger scale and continuously having people, I say continuously, like it's a daily event, but you know, on a regular basis, yeah, having people say like, you know, the way you guys talked about this, I would have written it off, but I'm actually really on board with this. This is going to be my next character. Or people saying like, yeah, you know, a year ago, I listened to your episode on, you know, this and this, and I decided to dip into that because I was playing an artificer, and you know, I wanted to play an artificer paladin who could smite and have their little robot dog next to them too. Like, awesome. That's so cool. So the fan feedback is just fun. And one of the most fun things we did was, so we have this joke character that I think came from like the very first episode. It's been one of Will's mental creations for who knows how long before the show.
Yeah.
But it's a character called Whips Nettington. Yeah. The entire concept is it's a character who only uses whips and nets. Nothing else. Because if you know anything about D&D 5e, both of those things suck.
Really nets bad.
Are a horrible idea. Unless you take a feat like crossbow expert, you have disadvantage attacking all the time. And the way to get out of a net is to either basically break a grapple, it's about the equivalent, or to slash through it for like 10 damage. It's easy. It's not good. Whips, on the other hand, do 1d4 damage and have 10 feet of reach. And that's where the positives end. As if 1d4 damage is a positive. It's just not a great weapon by any means. So Will's idea was always he wants to see a character that is legitimately good at using whips and nets and makes it a viable character. So getting to the point of this is we held a competition with our fans to build Whips Nettington. And we did like a tournament style where people came with their different builds and pitted them against each other, had people vote on it, and saw what rose to the top. And funny enough, I think the winner was a Beastmaster Rogue.
Interesting.
Yeah, right? Like you wouldn't expect the Beastmaster to be worth anything. And that was either first or second. I don't remember the specifics, but it was really neat. Like these people came up with just some wild combinations of like, yeah, you know, you net them the first turn, you action surge and beat the crap out of them with whips while smiting. And it's like, yeah, that's what I want. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Yeah. Gimme. So you're doing something cool on your Patreon. Now you didn't call it this, but I did. It's a puzzles and pugilism feature on the Patreon, the triple P offered by Monsters and Multiclass. What can you tell me about that? Because it sounded pretty cool in our pre-show.
Yeah. So my big thing has been that I hear a lot of naysayers of combat in D&D say that there's nothing really interesting about pitting one side against another and having them duke it out until one side's alive and the other side's dead, which is a valid criticism. I enjoy that combat, but there's ways you can shake it up, right? So my players have recently started going through a dungeon, and each room, it's very linear because, again, I'm very tired and prep takes a lot, but each room is a different puzzle encounter where there is something that needs to be solved while enemies or environmental factors harm the players. And it's been really, really fun to just try to think of, you know, different environments that they'd have to go through. One that I thought was pretty awesome and probably going to be putting up there next week was there would be a like a beholder in the center of the room with none of the magic icon. I took that out for balance reasons, but every single round, lightning strikes because it's a lightning themed room and fizzles around the floor, and there are copper plates on the floor. So the beholder is shooting I-beams at everybody, have to succeed these, you know, other, again, random effects happening. And the players need to figure out that they have to flip each of these tiles, because when the lightning strikes, it hits the tiles, they're copper plates, it coalesces into the beholder and heals it. So the only way to actually win is to flip all of the copper plates. If you fail to like your strength check trying to turn it over, then you get magically stuck to the plate. Lightning strikes, you take some damage. So little things like that, just coming up with puzzles where the end of the encounter is generally solving the puzzle more than it's killing the bad guy, have just been really fun to think about.
And that's available on your Patreon, right?
Yes. Yes, it is. So far, I've got two of the planned six. The first one is they're all elemental themed. So first one's a fire room. Second one is an ice room where I turned the ice puzzle in Pokemon. If you ever played like the old Game Boy Pokemon games, it's basically a sliding puzzle where you like just have to move and you just keep sliding until you get stopped by something.
Right.
While also getting, you know, ice spikes hurled at you.
Dope. Well, Jared, thanks so much for joining me today on the Cock Dive podcast. It was really great to chat with you, and hopefully my listeners will follow you to Monsters and Multiclass, even though you're discouraging them from doing it.
Nah, you should check it out. It's pretty cool. We put a lot of work into it, so
definitely appreciate it. Definitely check it out. They just had their 100th episode. They're on 101, released today. It was the Artificer Bard, the absolute life of the party.
Oh.
Thanks so much for joining me, and if you can use puzzles and pugilism if you want, I'm open to it.
Okay, I might steal it. I'll give you credit.
Oh yeah, I that's the least you could do.
Yeah.
All right, Jared, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, subscribe, bye. It's always good having you join me, and remember, if the die is cocked, it doesn't count. I look forward to chatting with you again next week.